Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What do you want to do?
Are you asking me what I want to do next?
Or what's on your list next?
On my list?
Yes.
Well, I've got the Ferrari drive sound, full stop, wankers. The Danes win the Food World Cup. I've got Eugenie's two-year-old is going to be an activist. I've got the French ski strike. I've got the Oscars. Who gives a shit about the Irish? Oh. I've got the California massacres. We're going to LA. What do we tell the kids?
Yeah.
And I've got Jeremy Paxman says he is dull because he likes macaroni cheese and afternoon naps.
Did anyone ever not think Jeremy Paxman was dull?
No, he's famously not dull.
Is he famously not dull?
He sits about fishing and asks questions to politics. Oh, yes, he's very dull. Okay, what of those? What do you want? We've thrown out this gallimaufry to the listeners.
What's a gallimaufry?
Even what's a gallimaufry?
Is it like a smorgasbord?
Yes, okay, it's exactly like that. It's a sort of Elizabethan word, but for an English Elizabethan word for it.
Well, obviously, I only ever want to rant about books.
Okay, so we'll talk about that.
But the thing is,
you got the throwing books out story?
I thought you took it out.
No.
Or maybe it's a new... I think it's... Is it in... Did it even get into the paper? I've certainly got it on my phone. Hang on one second.
I think the books... I've written about books. What do you want to say about books? Am I going to write a column about... Tell me roughly what the story
was. The thing
is
that the books is... There's a guy, I think, in Germany who died and left 70,000 books. And the second-hand book market in, I do think it's Germany, the second-hand book market in Germany, that's 70,000 books, that's a load of books. The second-hand book market in...
70,000 Bücher.
70,000
Bücher. Waren geleften by the man from Deutschland.
Yeah, exactly.
Unser second-hand, unser second-hand Buchenmarkt ist sehr voll mit Bücher und sie haben kein Besuch für alte Bücher.
Bruno Schroeder.
Different Bruno Schroeder.
Different Bruno, not Bruno Schroeder, the banking
guy. The famous banking
guy. Who's already dead. A retired German... Is he dead?
Who?
Bruno Schroeder.
I think so.
Yeah. A retired German mining engineer who has died at the age of 88.
A mining engineer had 70,000 books only in Deutschland. That's so good. I didn't know he was a mining engineer.
I'm amazed that he's not a doctor, because they're all doctors in Germany, aren't they?
Well, doctors don't have time to read. They're too busy. Schroeder.
No, they're a doctor of mining engineering. A doctor of engineering.
Oh, I see.
See what I mean?
He's basically a coal miner with 70,000 books. That's what I'm seeing.
So, leaving behind a trove of roughly 70,000 books. Its widowed owner of the house. The house... that he lived in was converted.
Shut up.
I mean, this makes me ill, the thought of 70,000 books in one house. And I really like books and I love reading, but my principle is no unnecessary books in this house. It's so easy to go to a bookshop and books are lovely and they're not that expensive and you can just buy a couple and think, oh, I'm just going to go home and just crack them. It's a lovely kind of new book smell. And I do, of course, allow the kids to have as many new books as they want. My rule is no new books in this house that you can buy on
Read my lips. No new books.
No new books, exactly. And people... And also, I think that people are quite stupidly performative about books and about reading. They say, well, I love the smell and I love the feel of a book in my hand. And I just think that's because you're a poser and you don't actually like reading. If you really are a devoted reader and you love reading, you would be happy to read on a Kindle.
And you go to people with those lovely houses with books everywhere and they're all lovely and shiny and glossy and you think, you've never read those books because otherwise they'd be sort of shabby and bent and they've arranged them all famously by colour, the red books and the blue books and the yellow books.
Yeah, that's for people who seriously don't read. And obviously I have books, we put our stuff into storage because of the building works, and I have probably 20 books that I will never throw away, that I love and I will keep forever. And everything else goes on my Kindle. And everything else, and I make you read on your Kindle as well. If you want a big reference book or a book that's really, really meaningful to you, fine. No more.
I have sat there at my desk with 4,000 books behind me on my study wall typing, and I haven't turned around and got up and looked something up in one of them for 20 years because you just Google it online.
Yeah.
Reading on. I have written before, though, about the Kindle, and then all the same people below the line say, oh, books do furnish a room.
I love the smell of a book. Yes, no, you should have books. You just shouldn't have piles of them all stacked up everywhere. It's gross.
And the other problem with it, of course, is that, and I think this is alluded to in these in the Times, is that it's the legacy that you leave to your children. What the fuck are they going to do with them? My best friend, Jem, his dad was a judge, a great collector of books. Mm. Jem has, in his garage, it's lined with bookshelves with Michael's sort of 10,000 books. He's not going to read them. I can't throw them away. You can't sell them anymore. Nobody, like a first edition of Harry Potter and the Wanker's Hat, whatever it is, you can sell. But everything else, no, it has no value. And
they have no value.
You get the charity shops, take it away.
Yeah. We recycle a lot of our really trashy old stuff that was falling to bits. We recycled.
Just chuck it in the recycling bin.
Put it in the recycling. And there's something...
Otherwise, you leave it to your children to do.
They have
when my dad died, there are all these books. And the rare books people come around and go, we'll have that, that and that.
Everything else.
Three books. And everything else. You throw away these books that your father kept all his life. Mm. He's Alan Corran, Wadham College, Oxford, 1957. Bin. Yeah. It feels sad. So one has to spare one's own children. In fact, the irony, of course, is that, not the irony, but the coincidence, it is in Germany that this has happened. And Germany did invent book burning. Mm. And while that's generally considered to be a bad thing, it's one of the least worst things that the Nazis did. I think massive great piles in the town squares of all our books gathering round.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye. Trying to avoid Sieg Heil, Lebensraum and Judenrausch when you're doing your shopping.
Well, the thing is,
but broadly, we should get to the village squares. And in this fuel crisis, we could say in our satirical, slightly over-the-top hyperbolic piece, couldn't we? In the fuel crisis, give these books to the poor to burn in the hearths of their grand Victorian houses that we imagine they live in because we know nothing about the poor.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
What's next?
So here's an idea I had for a piece which I think would be funny. Mm-hmm. Do you remember we talked last week about how I used to do a slot in the Times diary called Fascinating Historical Questions, to which the answer is no?
I do know that.
Okay. There's a question on the front of the Daily Mail, which I haven't looked at the story, but it says, is there a Chinese gadget in your home spying on you?
Yes. No.
No.
Unlikely.
No. But the story will say that we've got some Huawei, we don't use them very much, Huawei AirBuds.
I lost mine. You've still got yours.
I've still got mine that we did a sponsorship gig for and have them, and they're not quite as good as Apple. But we can say that because we've had the money now. And we had the odd Chinese gadget. We had that bizarre thing where Sam's globe. Sam got a talking globe for Christmas. And it doesn't recognise Taiwan.
Yeah.
And he's kidding and going, boom. Look, Dad, when I hit Taiwan for the capital, it should be Taipei. But it says Beijing.
Yeah.
And when you put currency, it says renminbi. But it ought to be the new Taiwanese dollar. What's up, Dad? And I said, how about you turn it upside down? Mm. He turns it upside down. Look at the thing on the battery case. What does it say? Oh, it says made in China, Dad. You go, yeah, China is brainwashing us with toys that don't recognise Taiwan. Mm. But is it listening to our conversations? Where were these speakers, these microphones that Ben's brought in, where were they manufactured? Made in Germany!
We know the Germans are listening to us.
We know the Germans are spying on us. Oh, they don't like what we've been saying about them today. Burn the books. They're all Nazis. Times Radio is using German. But there is probably China. If there are Chinese gadgets. I just did a Donald Trump thing with my fingers, which people should
Does he do that?
He does, famously, he does that with I'm sorry I did that. If
it's better than like Tony Blair, he's playing Shove Halfpenny.
So if there are Chinese gadgets spying on you, what would they see? Yeah?
Yes.
And I'm imagining like a John le Carré style novel in which a Chinese fridge reports to its paymasters in Beijing. Yeah, good, you're laughing. So it's like, and it's very hard to understand. If I was German, I would do the accent. As it's Chinese, I don't want to do the accent because that would be considered to be, that would be racist, weirdly.
But if they were
Russian, they would be, maybe I have to make them Russian. But the fact is, you've got a Chinese gadget reporting, what's it called, the You know, John, what do they call home in John le Carré novels? They call it, is it the park, the farm? It's something like that.
Oh, it's called the
circus.
It's the circus.
They report to control. Mm-hmm. So that, and or you could have like, or you could write it like le Carré. It's a misty morning in St James's Park. There's a kettle sitting on a park bench. A vacuum cleaner comes past and sort of drops something in a bin.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
Is that funny?
I love that.
And your appliances are all spying on you, and they're going we've got to pull the toaster out because we think he's turned.
Yeah, but you could also get in there. They could also be spying on an incredibly boring domestic couple, and because you got all those things about me opening things that are already. Me opening a new thing when there's something already in there, and you're always rearranging the fridge. And
oh, Target has opened a third pesto when two more were blatantly fresh. She must be sick in the head, or something. Could that be done? Is that quite funny?
I think that, you know, a kettle sitting on the bench, and then a Dyson vacuum cleaner comes trundling by, and like,
well, the Dyson's something. English, and this is a double agent. Yeah, it would have to be a Chinese brand.
Look, there are jokes already. This is great.
There'll be more from Esther and me in our kitchen after a short interlude. But to find out what I wrote about in the end, why not pick up a subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times and enjoy 1 month absolutely free? Just search thetimes.co.uk/Giles Corran has no idea. I've been promised that this will take you to an amazing offer, rather than just a website created by Ben randomly containing all my broadcasting mistakes. Although I'm sure that exists somewhere, it's just going to be up to you to find it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want to talk about the ridiculousness of Mensa?
So this is about this irritating little toddler whose parents think that
he's not irritating. He looks like a very, very
He does
sweet
look very
little,
nice. He's got his massive great glasses
on.
Little face.
Those aren't real glasses. Those are his pretend glasses.
Are they?
Yes. And he's got his pretend laptop and his pretend glasses.
Rubbish. No, those are his real glasses.
Yeah. No, they're not. Oh. Quick learner Teddy is made a member of Mensa age 3. And he's an incredibly sweet little boy. Oh, it says he's 3, but then he says it's 2. Typical newspaper.
Don't we not get into the Times is fact checking? It's slightly problematic.
Yeah. So he taught himself to read. Before he turned 3, he had moved on to teaching himself to count in 107 languages, including Mandarin, Welsh, French, and German. Anyway, so da 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 da. So they took him.
That's basically the story, love. No one wants to hear
the story. Is they had him assessed. And he had a high IQ, and then they applied to Mensa, and he did the Mensa test, and he passed the Mensa test. Anyway, so I went on the Mensa website yesterday.
Did you manage to make it work?
I made it work.
See, yeah. That's the first test.
I made it work, and they said, take our, you know, taster test to see if you should become a member of Mensa. And I think Mensa has turned quietly from a community of, I don't know, like-minded, kind of clever people to a sort of a scam, because I took that the sort of pre-Mensa test.
It didn't tell you you were a genius, did it?
I scored full marks. And I know it must be easy because I am a massive dimwit. And I know it must be easy because I could do that. No, I was laughing at how easy some of the questions were. And I know that they're easy because when I try and help Sam with his non-verbal reasoning, which is basically Mensa questions, like what does this box look like the other way around or whatever, they are impossible. What well, shape comes after...
Well, this comes on the back
after,
of our son, Sam, who's a very clever little boy, scoring only 10% in his verbal reasoning. Bottom of the entire class.
Non-verbal reasoning.
Non-verbal reasoning.
That's the nightmare one, non-verbal reasoning.
Anyway, so Sam is now turns out to be an absolute moron. Possibly. Although very good at cricket, and who cares? What's a good brain? What use is that going to be in cricket when he becomes a cricketer?
But I do think that Mensa has turned into something very, very faintly
This is a very good point you're making, because they used to say, you know, so can you join these dots? And it would always be quite hard.
Yeah.
You're saying it's like sort of one of those Capital Radio, win £1 million, phone this number. And the question is, the king is King Charles III, King Roderick the 48th, or King Esther the Nothing? and everyone, I know. And you phone the 98p
super
number.
Super easy, stupid question.
And you're saying Mensa are just doing 2 plus 2, you're in.
I think they might be. I really do. And I also...
Because basically you would hope that of all organisations, its own members are going to rumble it, aren't they, if it tries that?
If I rumbled it quite quickly. So it said, you know, so you're well done. You're 18 questions. You're 18 out of 18. Like,
really?
They were. Yeah, they were very, very easy. Very, very easy.
And then what did it want to do next? Send a check?
Yes.
Really?
It basically said, full marks for you. Why not try our...
Paid for
Mensa test.
It's as good as Mensa going, you'll never believe what these celebrities look like now.
It really is. So you pay... I didn't investigate how much it cost, but I could. So you pay whatever it is, and then you sit the proper Mensa test with the Mensa invigilator, and obviously get 0 out of 100.
And they laugh at you and throw shit.
And they just go, sorry, try again next time. You know, I think it's a tiny bit of a racket.
I've always worked on the principle a little bit of, you know, what sort of a person joins Mensa?
Yeah, good
you
question.
You know, they always tell you that sort of, I don't know, Mike Tyson is in Mensa. And
it's Gina Davis.
There are all these people like Mr. Blobby. There are all these people who turn out, they're all in Mensa. And you ask yourself, but do you think, was Stephen Hawking in Mensa? Is Salman Rushdie in Mensa?
Yes,
Is anyone, was Alan Turing in Mensa?
Yeah,
it
started in 1955, I think. So I think Alan Turing is probably just shy.
No, he was around. Well, anyway, let's... He wouldn't have done Mensa, would he?
Stephen Fry said in his autobiography, Moab is My Washpot, that he had his IQ tested and it was 142, which is, according to my IQ test that I took age 7, the same as mine.
Massive respect to Stephen Fry, who I love, and he's a brilliant man, and he's always been very supportive of me, but he's a lying bum bag, okay?
If my Vechler test, age 7 IQ is 142,
yes,
it means he's not that smart.
No, Stephen Fry's IQ will be 190. He's lying. Stephen is wonderful, but he is slightly ashamed of being so successful. He's embarrassed about being everyone's favourite intellectual. When I read one of his autobiographical volumes, I think I reviewed it in the Times, I was struck by his endlessly apologising. I was very lucky. I went to Cambridge. I somehow scraped in, and due to enormous good fortune, I got a quadruple first. But he's also very left-wing and very in a nice middle-class way and very woke, and he's now chairman of the MCC, and one of the things he wants to do is democratise it. He wants to get rid of the Eton and Harrow matches. He wants to do more diversity. All good things, but they come from a place, Stephen is just in that position of politics where he feels, unlike, for example, Nadeem Zahawi, he feels that he needs to sort of lead by example in his behaviour. So he's saying his IQ is 142. It's not true. My IQ is more than 142, and I am not ashamed of it or proud of it. Shall I tell you what it is? Oh, it's very high. it's higher than 142, but not a lot higher.
It doesn't mean anything.
I'm not clever than him.
You can't do anything, and neither can I.
I can't. I'm very clever.
You can't
I do our tax better than Nadeem Zahawi. I write pieces.
We can't even make the fucking electric car charge up. Well, I can't anyway.
No, but I can.
It doesn't mean anything, and that's why people are...
Look, I am stupid. I'm just saying in that thing, I think Stephen is probably, his IQ will be...
Do you think he cut it in half?
I imagine his IQ is about 160. He'll be absolutely in the top 0.01%. And he's saying that because he doesn't want to lose readers in the nicest possible way. The other thing I wanted to... Did you not feel triggered when you saw the picture of little Teddy?
Yeah.
And it said he could... he taught himself to read in lockdown when he was 2. Now... Aunt Kitty was basically 2, and I mean, she didn't teach herself to read, I taught her to read, but she could read-ish before she was 3. And I was terribly proud of it, and everyone was going, yeah, but it's not about measuring these things. I went, no, you're quite right, but look. And the fact is that she's now average. She's a bright kid, but she's not super top of the class. She's in the sort of competent groups at class. She's in set 2 for maths, not set 5, but she's not in set 1. She's like a good, bright kid, but at 2, she could read.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was going, oh, Kitty's so clever, she's so clever, she's so clever. And I was boasting, Kitty's so clever. And now the story amongst our sort of friendship group is, oh, Kitty's really clever. And she is, but only... This guy, he's shot off at 2. Great.
Yeah.
By the time he's... 11, he might be middle of the class. And by the time he's Stephen Fry's age, his IQ might only be 142.
He, like Kitty, was early with reading and numbers. And there's nothing here about his maths.
Numbers is maths.
Sorry?
No, you said it's early with reading and numbers.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, numbers
sorry.
Is maths.
Sorry.
I know your IQ is only 142.
Early with reading. You see, it means nothing. It's early with reading and letters, but it doesn't say anything about numbers. And numbers is the useful one, isn't it? Not reading.
Yeah. No, reading.
Everyone basically learns how to read.
You won't even let me buy books. So what use is reading?
Yeah, exactly.
I want to... should we talk about raising the retirement age?
Yes. Oh, you're a bit... You've started talking about your retirement in the last couple of years, and you seem a bit worried about it.
Well, I think this one sounds like a column. I need a column. I'm quite enjoying my columns landing quite hard when they're actually about things, mm-hmm. whereas the things we've talked about are quite fun. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder whether this move to raise the retirement age from 67 to 68, and they want to bring it in 2035 instead of the predicted 2042, and that means it's going to affect anybody who's 54 or less. And, or should I mean 54 or fewer? No, and 54
or under.
54 or no. And I'm obviously 54. I mean, I'm under 54 for another 3 or 4 months. It's like, it's probably, I don't think it really affects people like us because we're self-employed. Increasingly, yeah. I wonder what retirement age really affects.
What are we going to retire from exactly?
But this thing is, they're loath to bring it up.
Yeah.
Because they think it'll be a vote loser at the next election, because it's going to affect these younger people who are going to have to work longer. And all the old people who are going to benefit from it already vote Tory.
Yeah.
And their problem is to try and get these...
They're only raising it by a year.
Like, that's what I think. It doesn't make any difference.
No.
How can people be so... People of 30 might not vote Conservative because they're going to have to now work for 38 more years, not 37 more years. That's a generation that already is fucking work shy, WFH. Work for them is a thing that happens like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, but only for about 6 hours, and most of that is lunch break. Mm. You know, just doing it like, you know, pot noodle, TV on, clack, clack, out of office, bit of Instagram. And they want to stop doing that at 67 in order to do what? What do they think is going to be in retirement? Spend more time with the... The books they're not allowed to buy.
But the thing is that we are talking about people who are relying on a state pension, right? So, and with all due respect, the people that you're talking about, these people are creative people, possibly self-employed, who maybe have a SIP and aren't really relying on a state pension.
Yeah.
So you're talking about train drivers and nurses and, you know, people who are...
Well, take all the fun out of it.
People who are... I'm just offering a different point of view.
I can't be mean about them.
Sorry?
I can't be mean about them.
No. But okay.
Well, but how old do you want your bus driver to be?
Well...
Like 68? Just give me a break. Oh, damn, I hit the wrong pedal.
So what would your... What is your column? What's the headline?
Mine would be about, will nobody work anymore? Work shy millennials already. I mean, I've already delivered it to very little applause. My notion that this is a generation that don't want to work even now. So no wonder they want to stop further down. I don't know. I made some notes. It felt like I was on a roll before. What did I say? No. Oh, yes. When you retire, you die. That point. Okay. It's about presentation.
Work is good for you.
Work is good for you. Okay. So.
Arbeit macht frei.
Arbeit macht frei.
Arbeit macht frei. Wait.
Yeah.
See. Yeah.
Fine. But that's not true, is it? That's just what they put on the...
No, it's not true.
The gates of Auschwitz.
No, but there is a...
Arbeit macht jung.
Which
but although I'm not suggesting the government uses that as its thing. But no, the point is that we all know that people who retire, particularly men, retire and then die. Mm-hmm. They're saying that they have to extend the retirement age because we're all living longer. Someone has to pay money into those pension pots for people who are going to live now to 87 instead of 77. So that's quite reasonable because we can't just put the onus all on this very young workforce. So that we have to extend the time. But the thing is that if these people work longer, they will live longer. So because death is tend to be measured these days in, you tend to die like 8 years after you've retired. And if you retire...
Really?
Yeah. If you retire at 67, you'll die at 75. Retire at 68, you'll die at 76. Oh. Retire at 93. And you may well live to 100. So the government ought to sell this not as a retire early, but a live longer policy. In order to promote UK longevity and get us to the top of the longevity tables, Rishi Sunak should say, we're going to invite you to continue to work, well, force you to continue to work, until a bit later.
What you're saying is that the government have spun this wrong.
Yeah.
Fine. If you can think of something to pan it out to 1,400 words, then I think that would work.
It's only 1,200. 1,400.
But then what you're doing there is you're celebrating work, and your work is reasonably easy and pleasant. Whereas if you are a train driver, then, well, maybe your work is easy. I mean, train drivers, whenever I see them sort of swapping over on their shift, they always seem sort of quite jolly and sort of be friends with each other. And enjoying your work and enjoying the community that comes with work is one of the things that makes you happy and helps you live longer.
So we should embrace, I'm thinking of the headline, embrace the opportunity to work longer, live longer and be happier.
Yes, yes, exactly. I think so. I mean, I think you were starting to worry about retirement. I think retirement is very worrying. I mean, people work and they think, oh, I'm going to retire and then play golf. And they retire and then play one round of golf and think, well, that was boring. And it's really, it's difficult to know what to do with your retirement. If you're not going to be a real kind of community busybody and...
So work longer and... Exactly, then retire longer and die. You should work until you die and then you haven't got the boring bit afterwards. That's the hardest
part. Different cultures certainly handle their older populations in a different way. There are some cultures, I'm probably going to get this wrong, where all the manual labour is done by very old people and the young people sit about not doing anything. Where is it?
It's not a place.
It is.
It's a place in like Gulliver's Travels.
No, it isn't.
It's a satirical place.
It's a place where all the really kind of hard work and the carrying water and the carrying...
And the delivery drivers are all 90.
Yeah,
and the food
exactly.
takes 3 days to arrive.
Yeah, and everyone else just sort of sits about smoking pipes.
No, that's not a thing.
No, it was somewhere.
I mean, Italy, where the women do everything and the men just sit about in their string vest scratching their balls and being racist.
Well, there you go. In Italy, your nonna does everything. And that's
why... And
they
live to 100.
And that's why, exactly. And that's why... Well, they've got a Mediterranean diet, you see. That's why... Young kind of Italian sort of mummers are free to be sort of busty and carefree, flipping about in their sort of slinky dresses because they've got a nonna back home looking after their 19 children and giving them time to sort of curl their hair and do their eyelashes and sort of go down.
Have you ever backed this up with any sort of, have you been to Italy? Have you seen this? This is it's a wonderful picture.
No, but Italians are always going on about their nonnas who are always in the kitchen and sort of doing stuff. I mean, you know, if you, in an atomized society where generations don't live with each other, when you retire, there is a bit of an issue because you don't necessarily live near enough your family to be helpful. Maybe you don't want to be helpful to your family. Maybe you raise the children the first time and thanks, I was traumatised, don't want to do it again. You know, but then what is your purpose? And if we are going to live longer, then you do need to figure out what you're going to do. I wonder if your plans for your retirement is a better column than...
What am I going to do when I retire?
Yeah.
Well, sit around and watch Sam playing cricket for England.
Is that your plan?
Yeah, but when I'm 68, he'll be 28. He'll be in his prime. He'll be playing... Oh, no, he'll be 24. He'll be full of... Yes, anyway. That's my plan.
Alice, I'm glad you've got it sorted.
You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with me, Giles Corran.
And me, Esther Walker.
It's a Wireless Studios production for The Times, produced by Ben Mitchell. You can listen to us on The Times radio app or download from wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.